Godspeed with Carol Hollenbeck, Sundays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom. In an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace, I'm your host, Carol Hollenbeck. Our guest today is Jason Gregory, spiritual explorer and Australian author of the highly acclaimed book, Way of the Weirdo. According to Gregory, humanity has arrived at a moment where we need to make a choice, either to maintain our perilous course with the destruction of our world and ourselves, or choose the alternative, which is not a system but a journey to explore who we truly are and guide us to our next step in the evolutionary process. Jason, welcome to the Institute, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for having us on.
Now, your book, of course, is an expansive amount of subjects and all pertinent to our challenges today. But the dedication begins with a Hopi prophecy that says, when earthquakes, floods, hailstorms, drought, and famine will be the life of every day, the time will have then come for the return to the true path. But haven't earthquakes and floods and hail and drought always occurred? What makes this time different?
Well, they have always occurred. It's probably not of this magnitude at the moment. When we look at time as cyclical, I believe the Hopi were relaying their own experiences from maybe past experiences, many cycles that they lived through, but there's a definite reflection of a cycle of time that we are going through where things are increasing at this moment in time. Like, we have always had earthquakes and floods and drought, but at this moment, we can't ignore it. There is a magnification of that. This kind of ties in with the expansion and the contraction in consciousness, how we expand and contract. So at the moment we have come to a massive contraction point, but there is an instant pull. There is an expansion. In the Vedic view of the universe, they kind of, if we look at the yuga cycles, where we have a descending cycle where we go down to the Kali Yuga, is a very fast process. There's an acceleration of time, there's an acceleration of information, and the earth activity and the universal activity increases. But then when you leave the Kali, there's an instant expansion, not just of the activity in reality, but in the consciousness behind reality. So I believe we're at that point where if we have a Vedic view of the world, we're coming out of the Kali and we're ascending on the way up to, say, Satya Yuga, which is more of a spiritual age. But that's, if we're to take that view on, that's many, many thousands of years away.
Thank you very much for that answer. It's fascinating, too, when you speak of these things, that science also comes to mind when we think of the, for example, the expansion of the universe from the Big Bang to an extreme, where at some point they question, will it bounce back?
Yeah.
You get so taut, you know, and it does feel as though things are accelerating these days in terms of technology, in terms of science, in terms of how much we fit in our day, in terms of communication and technology. It's interesting. It's Thursday for me and Friday for you.
Yeah.
but we can speak to each other right now. Now, let's get to the title of your book right away, because it's fascinating. Why Way of the Weirdo? Who is the weirdo, and how do we become the weirdo?
Well, how do we become the weirdo? You have to embrace what's different in the world. A lot of people who do embrace that have a very open mind. And when you do have an open mind, you do clear a pathway to the infinite possibilities of what there is in this world and the infinite potential that you possess. So why I languaged it as weirdo was because when I love the word weird, and when you look at weird, weird is something that's strange to its surroundings, its environment, or something that sticks out. And I believe there's thousands, if we were to look at human beings, there's thousands of weirdos out there who feel different from, say, the masses consciousness at the moment, but there is a realization that, hey, we're not alone out here. There's many more weirdos out there. And that's sort of, in a nutshell, what a weirdo is, but it's someone, who does see the world differently and who is embracing that about themselves.
Now, you are someone who sees the world differently, so this term would refer to you, you think?
Yeah, it refers to me. That's why I kind of languaged that in the book. I thought it was just a really catchy way of, singing to the hearts of people who have always felt weird. But it's not just meant, the book, Way of the Weirdo, is not just meant for people who do feel like that. Like, as you would have read the book, Carol, it's directed at people who are as well a little less aware of themselves and the universe around them. So, I would say, I'm a weirdo, but I don't like any sort of labels. I just thought it was just a great way to catch people's attention, and especially to not have such a negative connotation to the word weirdo.
Yes, it is very catchy. And also, perhaps in previous times, for example, in my background, I would have written, let's say, about the saints who go through their awakening and find themselves on a very, perhaps, isolated path. But if everything's accelerating, then I guess so would the awakening as well. There'll be more and more people along this. Now, one of the many things you cover in your book is technology. Could you share with us your view on technology and how it has evolved, but perhaps not the human psyche? And what are the effects of that?
As we look out into the world, we can see that technology is increasing. I don't know its relation to the cycles of time, but there is a relationship there that we are evolving on the external world where, like you said, we could not have this conversation 20 years ago, like the way we are doing now through the internet.
That's right.
So that I'm not saying that the technology is bad. I do embrace it. I don't spend so much time engrossed into it. But the problem that I see is that's evolving. We're putting a lot of energy on the externalization of making this Earth that we live on a bit more comfortable. But all throughout history, the human psyche has not evolved. We've never evolved. Wars have evolved, yet the psychology behind it is still fragmented. That's what we're seeing. Our wars have really only become more high tech through the technology we use. We actually are using technology to harm each other than to get people together. That's what I see the problem being, because we can look at any military industrial complex or any system of science around the world. Usually the science and that benefits these institutions don't help you and I, and don't help bring the common unity back to community, that's the whole purpose of what the technology is supposed to do. So there is a problem there behind why we are externalizing such a pleasant place, peaches and cream, so to speak, but the darker aspects of ourself are still not embraced.
So it would be fair to say that our tools are evolving, but that we stopped?
Yeah, our tools are evolving. They're evolving at an increasing rate, but I think that the psychology of humans is becoming much more fragmented than ever before. Like, we used to only have four pillars of separation, and that was religion, countries, race, and sex. And now there's so many other forms of separation. There's class, there's status, there's, even down to the minuscule level of supporting sporting teams. we kill each other for these reasons.
Yeah.
So there is something there that we're not embracing, that darker side of our psyche. So the evolution is not taking place. It's taking place externally, but it's not taking place internally.
Ah, that's a great insight. So the darker side of our psyche being expressed externally, coming out with the sort of a negative use or potential of our tools and violence and war and separation and such, what would be, what would it look like to you if we actually explored this darker side internally?
I think we'd live in a much more peaceful world. I think people would be much more centered in their own being. And I don't know about yourself, Carol, but when you go on that journey of self-discovery, it's the greatest thing that you can ever do. You know,
yeah.
you know more about yourself, but you also know more about the world. And in that state, you not only become that peace that the world needs, but you also begin to practice peace in everyday life. That it does have an effect on the average individual. So if collectively we could face that shadow within ourselves and shine a bit of light on that darkness within ourselves, then
right.
that would truly reflect on the outside world. And like you said, instead of using the technology and that for negative means, it would reverse the polarity.
Well, you know, that's very interesting because, yes, for me, you mentioned before, the process of the spiritual path was in some way and is in some way sort of a process of falling in love with oneself and with life, with creation as it is. And when someone, let's say like a Jesus, says to love your neighbor as yourself, you know, it just sort of predicates that you need to love yourself first, and that is a source point to show your self-understanding, acceptance, compassion, forgiveness on that, going through that exploration of the darker side.
That's it. That's why those teachings are so important. Those teachings of Jesus, those teachings of Krishna, of Buddha, all of those collective teachings are so important, because if one's ready for those teachings, it will sing to the heart. You know, the kingdom of heaven truly is only within. And when
yeah.
one finds that, then they will know what is behind those phrases.
Hmm. Now, you write of healing in your book, and as we're talking about the human psyche and our, you know, the darker side of it, do we, as human beings, do we need healing, and I don't mean just as individuals here, corporately, our institutions, how do you perceive our healing process?
That's a good question. I always say, I had a lot of these questions on a tour I just did, and I always answered, you know, just look within yourself. But at the same time, when we do look out at the corporate structures of the world and the banking institutions and, you know, I suppose even some of the religious institutions,
yeah.
there's an inbuilt corruption there. Collectively, I would say if we were an alien looking down onto the earth, they would
yeah.
believe that, yeah, we do need healing as a species. But it can only begin with the individual. That's the whole process. You know, the micro reflects the macro, as above, so below in the Hermetic teachings. So
yeah.
I know a lot of people out there have actually new systems, new modalities of life for society. Like there's technological systems built that would maybe make our world a bit better, where the banking institutions and that would not exist. But if the consciousness behind it hasn't changed, then what's going to continue in that new civilization? There's still going to be war, there's still going to be corruption. It'll just be in a slightly different degree. So yes, we do need healing, but it's the individual, and that's ultimately a choice on that individual. And if that how reality works. If that healing presents itself to that individual, they need to embrace that. And then it's like I suppose the Four Noble Truths in Buddhism. You need to fully embrace that, and then you can, your true dharma comes from that, your true mission.
And that's so important what you just said, because it is sort of it's a calling, and the choice is ours to embrace it or not to embrace it. You know, there's been a lot of talk of sin through the ages, but my favorite definition of it comes from a fourth century theologian named Gregory of Nyssa, who defined sin very simply as refusal to grow. And yeah. I think we can all, you know, think of our own lives and perhaps several relatives where that call to grow, involving healing, involving some form of surrender to a new growth, was, you know, is resisted.
We see that daily within society. I know people who are aware that there is that calling, but they consciously choose to ignore it because they have the belief to perpetuate their own ego in the society. So, you know, from my standpoint, every time I had that calling, I embraced it and I kept moving forward and I continue to move forward.
Well, that sounds like fear is not getting in your way.
No, it's not.
Right. Now, you mentioned earlier, you brought up the banking institutions and such. That, can I read you a quote from your book?
Yep. Yeah.
That says, money is a manifestation of our dependence. Actually, as we understand this further, it is hard to blame any dictator or tyrannical group, as they are all manifestations of our own sickness within. Very, you know, poignant and pointed quote. Can you please share more about that, about money, how we use it, what it is, and how it's related to fear, as you suggest?
Well, it's related in fear as to keep our dependence upon a system that's sick, like that is in its death rolls. So we are depending on a system that not only harms us in many ways, but we're dependent on the energy that it gives us. I know money has, you can associate money with many things. Like, for me, money is just a transfer of energy if you value something, but I don't value a lot of material objects, but I will put value on certain things. Like, if it was to promote my book, I would use that energy to promote the book, to get the message out there. I'm not attached to the money. What we're seeing is people have a dependence on the money, because it comes from separation. It comes from status. It comes from status. People like to harbor a lot of money to be above others, but then they're also dependent on that money. If you are truly independent, then you would need nothing from this society except for the love of other human beings. You would not need money. So if in any way money is associated to fear, it's because it keeps you away from your own power. When you come into your own power, then you know that you are not dependent on anything but your own consciousness. And that's it. So that's the true essence of it, because it does, money also keeps you in a box. It keeps you in a box of understanding the world. It keeps you in a box of separation from people. So once you come into your own power, that will diminish, even though that we may still use money, but the dependence upon it won't be as much as someone who, say, loves the fashion game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's interesting. You mentioned the box, which is something I think about pretty often, about the boxes we put ourselves in, the boxes we put others in, or that others put us in some way, perhaps to understand the world, you know, to sort of put it in smaller pieces, but very, very limiting. And we run into this, of course, directly whenever we explore anything involving religion, which is, of course, another topic in the book.
Sorry, just to shine light on that, Carol, an analogy like from that box. It's actually an ancient occult analogy where you have a light bulb and you have cloth tapered all over the light bulb. And what we are doing is we are slowly peeling that cloth back. And as we peel it back, more light shines brighter. That's the process that we are going through. Like you said, with the boxes, but we are breaking those boxes. We are slowly breaking those boxes down.
Well, yes, and you know, it's definitely, and that's very much part of our work here. You know, with the Institute, we talk to everyone, because the more we talk to everyone, I mean, the more those boxes open up and go away, and our humanity comes out, you know, shining very clearly.
Another thing I wanted to mention on that quote, when I mentioned that it's hard to blame any dictator or tyrannical group,
because
they are all manifestations from our own sickness within. What I'm getting at there is, well, especially because the way reality works, if we don't embrace what is within us, it'll show out. It'll be reflected back to us in reality as what we need to embrace, and we are not in any way self-governing at the moment. We are dependent upon something that is external. So the way it shows up in reality is dictators, is tyrannical groups. This is just the way it is. You know, where there's light, there's dark. That's the way reality and consciousness works. So once one embraces it and becomes self-governing, then those aspects of our physical reality will disappear.
Thank you very much. Let's go back to the religion, which we were just beginning.
Yeah.
And, of course, when we talk about boxes, when you call yourself an Indian or a Muslim or a Christian or a European or anything else, you write in your book, you're being violent. Do you see why it's violent? Because you're separating yourself from the rest of mankind. This is a key concept of about separation, and it's not just about labels or names. I've you know, experienced this as a in my, you know, just as a Christian within the Christian faith. You know, what are you? What church are you? How many are there? Is there what? There's a, you know, well, are you Episcopalian? Are you Catholic? Are you Methodist? I'm Christian. But I can see the hemispheres sort of buckle because there's the need for the box. To say, yeah. Oh, then therefore I know what you believe and what your values are. Can you share a little bit about why you consider this violence?
Well, I believe all separation is violence because it's moving away from our true nature. Our true nature is of unification, not just being poignant that we're part of one blue and green ball on this planet, but we are all part of creation. We are all part of that one consciousness. We emanate from that. That resonates with you and I now. As I speak to you over in New York and I'm here in Australia, the only thing that separates you and I literally is the ideas and the concepts that are built within our mind. So it's the body-mind state of consciousness that we're identifying with. It's not that unified state of consciousness that we are identifying with. That is the problem. So if we are truly one consciousness, which science is only just really discovering, and they have troubles languaging this, but if you understand how to read a lot of ancient scriptures, especially even if you read the Bible or the Quran, they're all pointing to this. It's those who see the surface, then there's those who see the deeper essence of the teachings. But if you understand that it's all unified, then any form of separation is violence. And now that stems to, I think it was Ramana Maharishi once said, it's all learned ignorance, every form of separation, which that's just a beautiful quote for me, because everything that we have in our mind is learned. It's all learned. I learned that I was Australian. I learned that I was male. I learned that my family wasn't so religious. It was all learned along the way. So I had an inbuilt mode of separation. Say, for instance, Carol, I had a mode of separation. Say I was Islamic, built in my psychology.
Right.
And I viewed you, I would view you as Christian, not as Carol, the infinite being, just consciousness. I'd view you as Christian, American, you know, and so forth, a woman. So there's separation. The deepest essence of what the I have this conversation with a lot of researchers where we discuss why is it the way it is at the moment. And it's only fragmentation, it's only separation. I know they come to me with different ideas. They say, yeah, but the government's doing this and doing that. But what? How are they seeing the world? Are they seeing the world as one, or are they seeing themselves as foreign to the world, as separate to the world, from their own psychology, from their own inbuilt mode of their so-called truth that they perpetuate on the outside? That's the problem that we have in the world, is separation. Separation is the cause of suffering. That's all there is. And that was the greatest teachings from Buddha, was to get rid of all of those layers, all of those layers, back to that pure light, that pure consciousness, and seeing that beauty in every single human being. Not many people can do that, but to peel those layers back of separation is, that's what freedom is. When we say, like when we see cows in, they're boxed into a fence, and then the fence breaks and we see the cows run out. Everyone says they're free. Look, they're free. That's what we need to become within. We need to break down those walls of separation. That's where freedom is. We invest a lot of energy into mortgages, into going to church, going to synagogues and all this, but we don't invest any money into becoming free. Not money.
Thank you.
Invest any energy into becoming free.
Thank you so much for that answer. It's just right to the point and so insightful. We are halfway through the program right now, and so I'm going to just stop for a moment for a station ID. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. We're going to take a short break. After the break, we'll continue our conversation with Jason Gregory, author of Way of the Weirdo. Let's spend a couple of minutes now with an old favorite. Be right back.
The long and winding road. Disappear. I've seen that road before.
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute, live on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your host, Carol Hallenbeck, and that was The Long and Winding Road, a favorite song of mine, and pertinent, I think, to this spiritual journey where we can find ourselves alone, but still going back there. We're speaking with Jason Gregory, author of Way of the Weirdo. Now, Jason, Let's continue where we were before, which was fascinating. You were mentioning the splintering of people in so many ways, the labels, the categories, spiritually, culturally, religious, economic, and all these things that separate us. And in your book, you also offer some answers or begin to address it regarding the teachings. And the teachings say, do not say, go to a church or a mosque or synagogue or temple and worship these reference beings, but instead find that church, mosque, synagogue, and temple within ourselves. Can you address that here in more detail as a way of moving forward?
Well, that's what we have done in this world. We've externalized everything about ourselves. We externalize it to find that peace because we don't have a deeper understanding of why we're here on this planet, in this universe. We still believe that the world is without. The world is without to an extent, but the source of the world is within. There's an ebb and flow between. So what we have done for over an amount of history is we have tried to language what that is in the external world. What is that feeling within that we get? So we did build religions, we did build mosques, synagogues, churches, to try and feel that, but that feeling can only be felt within. That is why I mentioned before the kingdom of heaven is within. Jesus was saying that. He wasn't saying go and build a church and follow me for thousands of years, follow my teachings. He was saying freedom is truly within. That's where we need to find it. So we need to come back into our own power and realize that we're more than just the idea of who we are. We are all that there is. That's what we need to realize.
Yes, and you know that's something I've been thinking about for a long time too. When Jesus says, basically, just go talk to people, don't bring anything, you know, just have faith. And don't get me wrong, I appreciate churches and the beauty of them, and the need of one place for you know specific journeys or parts of them. But there's a great shift that takes place when the religion becomes about the building. And we talk about this a lot. You know, then you're back into the importance of money. Because you gotta fix the roof, right?
Yeah. Carol. I was saying I have nothing against churches and mosques or synagogues or any of those. Like, that they're all great means to find that realization within. I have nothing wrong with that. It's probably the total dependence upon it that puts you into that box. That's what I should have actually said. But, you know, we need to realize here that the whole place is a temple. The whole universe is a temple that we live in. And, you know, we can appreciate that every day.
Yes, it also, you know, the way it's been structured also has people basically committing themselves to, let's say, an hour or two on a weekend to worship or experience something focused on spirituality. But originally it began in the home. You know, all churches met in homes, and many still do. Like, for example, the Amish still meet in people's homes, and it rotates. In terms of who hosts the worship, I'm interested in the future of bringing for the sacred back into the home, where the family and the parents are seen as the, you know, as a source and direct connection for children. What are your thoughts on the basically sacred in the everyday?
Oh, it's 100%. It's imperative for our spiritual growth. Like, my home here is basically, it is like a temple. The way my wife and I live here is basically like a temple. And when a lot of people visit our home, they are humbled in that energy. Because we see the importance of living a humble life and always honoring that which connects us all. Like, that is, what is imperative in life. It's not how much money we have in the bank. It's to honor that creation and honor that divine spark that's within all of us. That's what we need to honor. It's not the bank account.
Now, the something you also have mentioned is about a false form of the path that's been spreading across the planet, a sort of a trendy form of spirituality. You mentioned this view of the path as nothing more than narrow-mindedness. Could you explain that more?
It goes back to the box theory again, because especially when I lived in India, you see a lot of, especially Western people who go to India because they know it's a very spiritual place, to try and find more about themselves. And they associate there's a whole fashion behind it, behind this trend, which puts them into a box, because especially when you view some of these people, they live from this dogma and they still project their realness onto other beings who probably aren't as aware as they are. But this, once you define yourself, you've built a dogma for yourself. You live in a box. So for myself, like that, I'm not saying that everything I'm saying here today is 100% true. You just have to experience it for yourself. But I've shattered all of my belief systems. I'm not saying that I don't live from the mind. We all still do live from the mind. It's like a wave. It comes and goes. But I'm not bound by any belief that will put me into a spot of discomfort within the mind, or to put me in a state where I would want to inflict harm on another person. So that's what I was trying to get at when I stated that this view of the path is nothing more than narrow-mindedness, because the spirituality is free. Spirituality doesn't have a dress sense. That's how I see spirituality. Like, organized religion has done its best to kill spirituality. But the deeper essence of religion is spirituality. It's free. It's unbounded. It's there to realize who you are.
Yes, at its core.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I see that. And also, I think many of the religions have, you know, what we call dogma or doctrine or laws, you know, that in earlier history were geared very much to help us to avoid, you know, our own demise, basically. And I think they were very well intentioned, in a way to protect us, but which, you know, there's always a double-edged sword to that, when you want to step out and explore something, as you say, on your own path. Now, you refer to messengers, the messengers in the book, and I know you've mentioned several in our conversation, Jesus, Krishna, Buddha, and more. And you say that they're people who lived an example of unity and not division. For the world to see, their message is right in front of our face and ready to unveil this peaceful world. So why do we not listen, you ask? Why do we not listen? This is probably the big question, I imagine, in the back of many people's minds. When we're watching TV, when we're watching the news, when we're watching the problems, we know what the problems are. They're really plain as the nose on your face. And go ahead. Why do people not listen?
It comes back to our own training, our own ignorance, to our own nature. We could relate this to the country that you live in. Like a beautiful human being, like Martin Luther King Jr. could live, and he showed he was a beacon of light for the American civilization at that time, and He chose no race, he chose no belief. He did live from Christianity, but he always chose the path to embrace humanity. And at that time, America did embrace his message. You know, not all Americans, but majority were like, yeah, okay, we're sick of all of this crap about the divisions between races and religions and whatnot. But once he had passed over, everyone went back to the way it was. Like, that was the episode of Martin Luther King on television, and has turned it over to the cartoons. Like, there is a built-in, there is built-in ignorance into us. It comes from our fragmented psyche. We can't ignore it, because we're so busy within the mind that we can't even logically look at these situations, let alone spiritually look at what a human being like, say, Gandhi was doing in India. Like, a massive human being, not in physical nature, but in spiritual nature, to try and bring a billion people together out of understanding that, look, we are all human beings just living on this earth, not a Muslim, not a Hindu. Let's come to some understanding here. But then once he had passed over, still we didn't listen. So the true essence of this, to try and hear what these people are saying, is move all of that within you that disagrees with what these people are saying. That's what has to happen. You need to move that aside and realize that your eyes are the same as their eyes. You can see a unified world if you choose to, or you can continue to perpetuate your own ego in this world.
And does perpetuating that ego, is that just directly just connected to fear? What is there in terms of, because you say that, you know, the modern day translucent or weirdo is going through their own resurrection. And, you know, for me, any resurrection implies that there is a death and resurrection. There is a surrender to something new. So we need to let go of something in order to move forward. And is that our sticking point?
That is our sticking point. It's like what we spoke about earlier about the shadow. It relates to that as well. But, yeah, we have personal resurrections where we need to let go of. An ancient sage that I listen to says you need to consciously die to who you are not, to what you have learned. And once you consciously die from that, then you will grow into be that true being, the true light that you are. So that's what that implies. There is a letting go. There's a letting go of who we are not. Now, some people may not understand that, but if you just even look at the very surface level. Why are you American? Why am I Australian? Like, why is any of that there? Can you let go of that and still live your existence and truly live from that existence? Not just passively just push it aside and just say, oh, I'm not American for the day. Truly live from there. Live from, I'm just a human being having an experience in this universe. See what happens. See if something resurrects within you that the illusion of duality falls away, and you can understand more about consciousness and your role in this universe.
That always, to me, it always becomes real when we think of, how do these things apply to the guy in the car on the Golden Gate Bridge who's stuck in traffic and heading to work, and with all the pressures of, you know, the mortgage and the bills and the kids and the appointment and all of that. How do we talk about, if we can be just a little more detailed, the letting go there?
Yeah, I had this question yesterday.
What's the first step?
Sorry?
What's a first step, even in just a subtle way?
Just self-inquiry. Look at yourself. Just look into your own being. Just inquire. That's the first step, I would say. For myself, I can only say from my experience, but I don't want my experience to be everyone else's experience. The way I consciously grew was exploring the external world. And the amazing thing that happened was I found out a lot that was wrong with the world, but then I understood why they did it. I understood that the only solution to that is not to fight what it is, but just to become what it's not. Become who you truly are. Now, I had this question yesterday. It's good that you mentioned this, because a good friend of mine He totally understands and he totally feels what we are saying, but he has the kids and he has a mortgage and he has a car.
Yeah.
He's built all of this up around himself.
Right.
But there is that calling within him to look there. He knows that. But because the external world's pulling him into the illusion of, I've got to support my family, even though he does have that role. I'm not ignoring that.
Right.
But how much time are you emphasizing on freedom instead of paying a mortgage? That's where we need to be really honest with ourselves. And the guy who's sitting on the Golden Gate Bridge right now listening, he needs to be serious to himself. Am I growing at this 9-to-5 job that I'm going to at the moment? Or is it better off that I get a casual job and just work 4 hours a day and concentrate more on myself? I don't need so much material possessions. Because honestly, when we think about material energy, we only need three things: food, clothing, and shelter, and that's it. So why do we need everything else on top? That's what we need to ask ourselves.
And yes, and I do believe that, you know, for the most part, people are well-intentioned. People are, even if they're feeling the pressure of this life that they've built for themselves, that they're good people really trying to do the right thing according to the culture, which is on some level burdening or separating or splintering things, but doing their best, you know, in the meantime. But what you're talking about is balance. It sounds to me like to focus on balance, or giving yourself, really treating yourself well by connecting with who you truly are inside, this infinite being you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Find that balance. And like, as you probably know, Carol, resurrection and enlightenment and all of this, it's not a collective thing. Well, not this time, not in this time of the cycle. It's not a collective thing. I'm not so sure about other times, but it's an individual experience. So that's why I do be careful when I'm around other people who say they wouldn't get into a conversation like you and I are now, but I observe and I can understand where they come from. It's just not that time for them to have that experience. We're eternal. That's what we need to understand. That experience may be embraced in another life, but it's just not for them at this time and the infinite, I should say. But yeah, that's it. Like, and I see a lot of people actually saying that the spiritual movement, especially, where there's an air of arrogance to people who aren't more aware. So for me, I try to just sow a good word here and do a good deed there out of love and not out of fear.
Right. Right. Yes, that's interesting, because you mentioned the word guru just sort of came to mind when you mentioned some folks who are very self-aware as being aware. And you know, really, I think the essence of the spiritual path is, as you said, on some level, just one of service and helping. You know, you met when you were referring to India before, the image of Mother Teresa came to me, as well as this really great movie called The Darjeeling Express. Have you seen that?
No, I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
Oh, gosh, I think you would love that movie. It hits
right
head on with what you're talking about, with like three American brothers, you know, going on a spiritual journey and who are so intent on having it, they don't realize they're having it. It's true. It's wonderful. The fact that, someone like Teresa living out her life completely, just taking care and taking care and taking care. And she was asked, about this terrible poverty that she's working in. And she mentioned, well, here there's maybe a physical poverty, but it doesn't compare to the spiritual poverty of the Western culture. And
exactly.
That's
she said it that way.
Yes, the materialism, even if you think you're supposed to, you know, the materialism, the focus on money, or, you know, the greed in a larger context, really splintering us to a point where I think, you know, it seems like the planet's kind of feeling it.
It's feeling it. Yeah, it's feeling. I believe it's feeling the Western psyche. It's feeling the disillusionment with material energy. Like, it's great that Mother Teresa said that. That's perfect because, there is a spiritual poverty within the West. I live in a city in Australia here, and I try not to judge, but walking through the streets, it's hard to be around sometimes because it's almost animalistic in nature, the way humans have become. And we've evolved out of that to become that infinite expression. And when you are in a place like India or, say, Africa or South America, there is a poverty in the physical sense, but that vibration that runs through those lanes and the way that people are, you can't ignore it. I met children on the streets of Calcutta where they had nothing, but they had a smile on their face. And in the West, you don't get that. You get, Mom, how much is this? I want this. That's what you get.
Well, I think things are stretching to the point here where the need for balance is becoming just a cry out, and you are one of the people who are helping to address that. We're coming to the end of our program, Jason, but I'd like some time, if people would like to learn more about your work or find your book, where should they go? Do you have some website information for us?
Well, my website's in the process of it being built. At the moment, the only way I can be contacted is through the One World Within Network via YouTube, youtube.com/OneWorldWithin, and twitter.com/OneWorldWithin, or you can email me at jasongregory@hotmail.com.au. And, yeah, you can find the book online anywhere, through Amazon, or you can even visit Inner Circle Publishing, and you can see my publishing page there. That's innercirclepublishing.com.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. I feel there's so much more we can talk about, but across all these time zones, I just want to thank you for coming on the program, and we hope that you stay in touch. Let us know what's going on. If you have more books or projects, please let us know.
I will do, Carol, and thank you and Michael for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and you guys are doing beautiful work yourselves.
Thank you again. And thank you, listeners, for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. This program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City. Our guest was Jason Gregory, and believe it or not, our engineer was Gregory Jason. And the show is produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you would like to hear this or any of our previous shows again or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com, where you can find my own books on the spiritual core of relationships as well as a library of others from around the world. Please send your comments to contact@GodspeedInstitute.com. We'd love to hear from you. Join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.